From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made just over a year ago, August 20th, 2015, in the Rochester Public Market. A new restaurant named Fiorella opened, run by a husband and wife team with Italian roots. It is the summer of food on Connections, and our series of conversations about the food and agriculture scene continues with a question. What does the term Italian food mean in the United States? Chef Gino Ruggiero has an answer, and we're going to hear about that this hour. In fact, Chef Ruggiero and his wife are here, Gino and Allison, and the name of their restaurant, I can't believe they had to remind me before the hour began, is named after their beautiful daughter, Fiorella.
Correct.
Congratulations on hitting the year mark, by the way.
Cheers. Thank you.
They are Gino is a first-generation Italian-American who spent more than a decade in the local food scene before launching Fiorella, and Allison is a second generation, right?
That's right.
All right. So you're Rochester natives. They went to local schools, grew up here. But Gino, for you, let's see here. Both your parents are from Italy.
Both my parents, yeah, are from actually the same small town right outside of Naples, Italy, northeast, called Bucciano. And they immigrated here separately and met here because a large portion of that town came here, so they had friends and family here and whatnot.
Did you grow up hearing more English or Italian at home?
Mostly Italian in the home when we were bad or getting yelled at or they didn't want us to understand what they were talking about. But a lot of English, too, obviously.
Did you absorb any of that Italian or is it rusty?
Yeah, the bad words, you know.
Yeah, the really useful stuff, right?
No, yeah. Definitely absorbed a lot of it, but they spoke a dialect, so it's definitely a not Italian proper, I guess you would say.
And Allison, you're a second generation, so
that's
your
right.
Grandparents?
Yep.
Are from where?
Abruzzo.
Abruzzo.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what did you remember growing up? I want to ask both of you, growing up, when you're this close to real Italian culture and heritage, what the kind of food you grew up with. Allison, what kind of food was in your house growing up?
Well, for us, the big center of everything was Sunday dinner. So we all gather every single Sunday at my grandmother's house, and she cooks. It's usually some sort of pasta with a red sauce, and then brajol, meatballs, and then we have a nice big green salad. So sort of what you would think of, you know, just pasta, red sauce. And then if it was your birthday, you got to pick a special thing. Like I always wanted gnocchi. My cousins wanted lasagna. Stuff like that.
And salad after the main course, right?
Yes.
The digestif.
That's right.
Totally.
You know, going into Italy for the first time in 2008, that was one of the things I loved most. And now I come back and I always want the salad last.
Yeah.
You know, it's a perfect conclusion to the meal. So, Gino, you said the same thing Sunday nights?
Yeah, definitely the Sunday meal. Sundays growing up, I remember all morning, the sauce smells permeating the air, you know, the frying the meatballs, the brajol, Italian soccer would be on somewhere in the background. The radio, my uncle was on a radio show, actually, an Italian radio show, so we'd listen to him a lot. The southern ragu napolitana, which, the, you know, where they put the meatballs and sausage and brajol right in the sauce and then serve it separately from the pasta. You know, that was a mainstay every Sunday for us.
And night to night, was there any sort of a ritual in your family eating?
Yeah, I mean, it was very, at night, you know, during the week, obviously, it's busier. My mom would throw together some great meals, actually. A lot of things that, at the time, I might not have appreciated, but growing up, I now I love them, you know, like lentils and pasta, stuff like that.
Children have no appreciation.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like when I was younger, I didn't want to eat any of that stuff. I used to thumb my nose at it, but now, you know, I just love it.
I imagine, though, or at least I hope, Fiorella's still at an age. She's two, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So she's still at an age where she should be eating just about anything, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's a great eater.
Wait till she's four, and you have to have this conversation where you say, "Fio, when you were two, you loved this," and she'll say, "Did I really?" You say, "Yes. What has happened?" You know, I imagine she is growing up a great eater.
She's pretty snobby. She likes, you know, Fiorella's restaurant sauce. She kind of
it's true.
Sometimes she won't eat, you know, other stuff. You know, we get it at other places or whatnot.
Gino, you mentioned that you've got how many siblings?
Two brothers,
yeah. And all with those wonderfully authentic Italian names.
Oh yeah,
Gino and
my older brother Piero. Piero.
Yeah.
We called him Pete, though. And my younger brother's Gian Paolo, named after our the Pope there, John Paul. But, at least their name's anglicized a little. I was just Gino growing up. Right?
that's sort of, and Fiorello is, I just love them. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Where did you hear it first?
You want to?
We were in Napoli, in Naples. Mm-hmm. And
you can say Napoli.
We were in Napoli. And a friend of ours had recommended a tour guide there that was her friend. And her name was Fiorella. And when we were walking around Napoli with her, Gino and I looked at each other and said, isn't her name beautiful?
This was pre-engagement, pre-everything. Yeah. And we just kind of fell in love with that name. And we always, we just stuck with it.
Yep.
Well, I love the name. It's Restaurant Fiorella. It's in the public market. They just celebrated a year. I have those CNBC stats that they probably know and the Ruggieros don't need to talk about. But, CNBC says around 60% of new restaurants do not make their first anniversary. So did you know that, Allison? I mean, Gino, did you know
that?
You knew that?
Yeah,
sure.
We knew it. We would, try not to talk about it a lot. It was always in the back of our minds, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people say a good way to make a small fortune is to start with a large fortune and then open a restaurant. So before we get there, let's back up, though, because I want to know when you sort of entered the food industry. Gino has been in the Rochester food scene for a number of years, a Tuvine for how many years, 13 years?
I was there actually almost 12 years,
12 years,
about 11 and a half years. Yeah, I went to culinary school, Johnson & Wales, Providence, Rhode Island. Finished up there around 2002. Came home, was milling around, probably up to no good, and then started at Tuvine and just was there, like I said, ever since.
Did you know early on? I mean, you said you went to culinary school pretty young. So you knew you wanted to do that. Allison said no.
When he was a child, he was the worst eater.
Yeah. Like I was saying before, I was very picky eater, but
no vegetables.
After high school, I did MCC, and it was just kind of the perpetual liberal arts major. Didn't really know what I wanted to do.
How did a first generation Italian in this country with Italian parents not like vegetables growing up?
I don't know. It was just,
shame for your family?
Oh my God! Yeah.
Because that has changed, thankfully.
And then to go 180, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
to
do
get
what
into
I
cooking.
Do now.
So how did that happen? I mean, what was it? Because I'll back up and say I can relate to this, but I have a better excuse, Gino. You grew up with Italian parents.
I know. You're
loving
right.
You're
food.
Right. I love my mother. She cooks about 3 or 4 different things, and they are wonderful in their own right. But there was a lot of gray, pallid vegetables that came out of cans. I didn't see a lot of fresh vegetables.
Yeah.
And I remember coming up to the Finger Lakes and seeing, Mennonite stands and produce everywhere and kind of, what is that? And that turned me around. That changed me. What was it for you?
I think maybe just being immersed in it from birth, I think it wasn't anything special to me. But then, realizing, as I got older and started trying new things and getting away from, the nest, my mom was making, asparagus frittatas for our lunch, stuff that it considered now almost like, fancy brunch food or something,
Yeah.
And we were eating Nutella before it was trendy and stuff like that, So, I did a 180 and now I want to eat everything pretty much.
Yeah. Is there anything you won't eat?
Well, I have an allergy to salmon, so I can't eat salmon.
Well, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
We should have done
I'm not a big tripe fan.
We should have done this Newlywed Game style to see if Allison would agree. So you're not a big tripe fan.
No, I don't know why people go nuts for it. I guess it's maybe a nostalgia thing or something, but I mean, I'll try it here and there, but I'm not, I don't go nuts for it.
The last time we were in Rome, he ate horse.
Yeah, I did, but it was more like a novelty thing. It was like a jerky.
Okay. See, that's not...
Over there, they have these equino butchers. They're horse butchers. I guess years ago, they used to eat horse. And now it's more of like a novelty or
more of a
tradition
novelty.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll eat it for special occasions and whatnot.
Allison, did you grow up a good eater?
Sure, but I became a vegetarian at a very young age, much to my grandmother's dismay.
your Italian grandmother can't believe you're making
she didn't like that.
How old were you?
Oh, I was probably in third grade.
And what set that course for you?
Because I loved animals.
Just like that?
Yeah.
and and have remained a vegetarian.
Still a vegetarian, yeah.
Okay. Gino, can you, is that okay with you?
It's fine with me, you know, and like you were saying, you know, Italians actually, we love our veggies, so it's fun to cook different things with vegetables. And in Italy, you'll notice, you'll see a lot, they don't eat a lot of meat like we do here in America. Like for special occasions, they'll have big meat dish and stuff like that. So part of their daily routine is cooking up what's in season, what vegetables they can grab at the market. So it's been a fun challenge, you know?
well, you know, this time of year, you know, just talking with friends the other day, this time of year, it's
great this time.
It's pretty repetitive, but it's beautiful repetitive because, you know, we just have bell peppers and funky tomatoes of all kinds in the backyard.
Eggplants.
And, you know, my wife, of course, is a tremendous cook, and I love being in the kitchen, but I try not to... I'm not as diverse as skilled as she is, but what's better than this time of year just grabbing tomatoes, bell peppers, putting like a little chunk sauce, a little garlic, herbs out of the garden, toss it with pasta, and it's like, I'm not missing any meat here.
Yeah.
I don't feel the need for meat.
There's a heartiness to that in and of itself that, yeah, you don't need to mess it up with any other, anything like meat or pancetta or anything like that, you know what I mean?
Which it can be good.
But it can be great. Don't get me wrong. You know, I just made myself a little hungry by saying that.
We're talking to Chef Gino Ruggiero and Allison Ruggiero of Restaurant Fiorella. They just celebrated 1 year open. They're at the Public Market there. And we're talking to them on this Summer of Food series of conversations. If you've missed some of our earlier series of the Summer of Food conversations on Connections, we've tried to catalog those for you. And we've got a wide range of discussions. I mean, just a week ago today, we were talking about the decline in eating cereal. And that discussion got a lot more interesting than I think a lot of people expected. But sometimes it's just great to sit down with people who are putting their passion and their skin in the game when it comes to owning a restaurant, taking a risk, trying to follow their passion. And that's what's happening with Fiorella. They just, again, celebrated at August 20th, 1 year there. The Public Market's cool space. And, you know, I was just there last night as part of a Brainery food crawl. We had a great time there that concluded at Fiorella. It is a really neat space, but I wonder if you... Did you know right away that space you wanted? Did you look around the area? Why did you decide there?
We were looking for a while.
Yeah.
For a couple of years.
It was kind of always been in the back of our minds to open a place. And I think any chef or anyone who's been in the business for a while, you're constantly looking at, you know, mm-hmm. you drive by, you see something available. It's always, whether you're going to do it or not is one thing. But so, yeah, we were kind of looking. Then when I left Tuvine, it just kind of, instead of going from the back burner, went right to the front burner, and we were, like, seriously looking. And we looked at a couple other spaces that we almost signed on, but once the market became available, it was like a no-brainer once that space became available.
What was in that space before?
Martha Jane's
Bakery.
There
was a couple different bakeries.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you know the Public Market, you've probably seen it, and I see the phone ringing. I'll mention, by the way, if you want to jump in with any questions or comments as we talk Italian, or maybe share, you know, if you want to scold Gino for being a terrible childhood eater.
Or I made up for it. If you saw my belly.
It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're going to get to menu construction and all kinds of other fun parts of the conversation with them. Bill in Brighton wants to jump into the conversation. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi, couldn't help but note that wonderful comment about the Italians' reverence for vegetables. One of the few times I went to Italy, the thing I just fell in love with, I said, I wish I could eat vegetables for life in Italy. And even in the fine white tablecloth restaurants, there was one called Il Passato, it's not there now, in Piazza Navona. When we came in,
Roma.
The antipasto table must have been 15 feet long with all these fresh-picked vegetables with all sorts of cheese and seafood stuffings that were simply out of this world. But the other thing that was so impressive to me is the Italian graciousness. This particular restaurant, where it looked like the front, it actually, the entrance that all the regulars went in was on the side, and it had been that way for years. But this was August, and it was in the heat of August, and the people that supported that restaurant, Italians that were had, with some money, had fled Rome, both for the heat and the tourists. And when we started to go to the restaurant, instead of directing us to the side, they threw tables aside and opened these doors that probably hadn't been open for years because they did not want to interrupt our idea of entering that restaurant. And then when we left, it was absolutely pouring rain, and it was 10 feet behind their portico, from their portico to the cab. And there were five cooks and five waiters with umbrellas making a waterproof arch for us to get to the cab. I will never forget Italy for both its vegetables and its ultimate graciousness.
Yeah, wow. Sounds very memorable.
Bill, thank you very much for that phone call. And on that note, let me just ask you, the first time, what was your first memory of going to Italy, Gino?
I went to Italy for the first time 2001, summer of 2001, for an extended period, like over a month. I think it was like 6 weeks. And we toured around, and did the, I wouldn't say touristy stuff, but saw the, went to Rome, went to Pisa, stuff like that. Then I stayed with family for 2 weeks in the little small town I was telling you about, Bucciano. And that part really, it was memorable to me.
Yeah.
Because, my my father's parents lived in Rochester for a while, for about 10 years. But they moved back to Italy probably like in the mid-70s, like when I was real young. So just to go see them in their environment, I'd talk to them on the phone and stuff. This is pre, merely emailing all the time.
Sure.
And stuff like that. And just to see them in their environment, in their house, and their villa, and the vegetables and stuff they grew, their garden, it was amazing. Like, they had, like, kiwis growing and stuff like you wouldn't imagine, It was beautiful.
And Bill's story, I think, if you spend enough time in small Italian towns, you'll eventually have a story like that, won't you?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you hear it from a lot of people, the cattle or the sheep, like crossing the road. And that stuff really happens, and it just really makes your trip that much more memorable,
Allison, what was your first trip to Italy?
My first trip was in the summer of 1999, I think, and it was like all through Italy, similar to Gino's. So I saw all the different spots, and I actually didn't go see my family until about 10 years after that. And then I went this last time with Gino, and we stayed with my family right on the Adriatic. So that's super nice, and they cook incredible food.
It was beautiful. It's like a vacation spot. You're literally like right on the beach. A lot of Italians and Europeans go there for vacation. That was great.
And I'm careful not to overgeneralize about a country's food culture. Certainly the more urban settings, Rome, Milan, food culture is different than it is in the countryside.
Totally.
But in the countryside, the food culture really is so enjoyable. They really do slow it down for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Dinners can be really long. And I imagine that at least has some kind of an impact on you. I mean, not that you want diners to come into Fiorella and stay for 5 hours, Gino, but Gino and Allison...
Yeah, small dining.
Sure. But at least not only with your Italian roots yourselves, but having traveled and enjoyed and having those experiences, I mean, the look on Allison's face just describing some of that, you can see what it means to you. Does that sort of inform you in any way how you want to run your restaurant?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. We want people to kind of enjoy the experience, the total experience. Obviously, the food is very important, and, we're connected to the market, so we're trying to do the whole, seasonality and fresh, and everything's fresh, but you know what I mean? But to experience the whole restaurant, the simplicity of the design, the simplicity of the food, just to kind of walk away with the feeling, like that gentleman caller said, just have a memorable experience,
What do you think, Allison?
I agree. We want it to be simple, but not easy.
Yeah. Not to say that it's easy, yeah.
What a great way to describe it. Simple but not easy.
That's what Gino says.
Yeah.
Oh, you stole that from your husband? Oh, it's so nice to get credit, isn't it, Gino?
Cheers. For once.
We're talking to Gino and Allison Ruggiero, who are the owners of Fiorella, a restaurant in the Public Market in Rochester, and Shirley from Fairport called just asking about the hours. The hours, it's funny we mentioned the hours because it's open 10 to 2 for lunch. So why aren't you there? I guess you're because you're here.
Yeah,
true.
We're here.
You're
I still so have pizza flour actually on my shoes. We came literally
you busted
straight
it
from
straight
there.
Over yeah. from there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, so what are the hours for Shirley and anybody who wants to know?
We are open Wednesday through Saturday, lunch and dinner. So we close for lunch at 2 and open back up for dinner at 5.
All right, 10 to 2 for lunch,
mm-hmm.
and dinner from 5 to 10. 5 to 10. Mm-hmm. So there you go, Shirley. And have you had? Have you had Italian immigrants? Have you had Italians come in?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
And is that
they
always
bring us
fun
presents.
For you? Yeah. Is that
yeah.
always fun for you when
yeah.
you have that episode?
It is. It's great. You know, obviously we want everyone to be happy, but you know, to see the Italian Americans here who enjoy it, you know, our family and friends and people off the street, but to see people from Italy come in and say, "Wow, you know, we're kind of surprised. This reminds us of Italy." The way the products you use, the way you prepare them, you know, the pizza, the pasta, whatever it might be, just kind of reminding them of home.
That's probably the best compliment you can get.
Oh my God, I'm giddy. Ask her when I'm there.
And Allison, you said they bring gifts, huh?
Sure. Yes, the last time Vincenzo, a student at the University of Rochester, brought us a Napoli scarf for
the
soccer team.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. He likes our.
He loves our pizza.
Our pizza and our pasta and our desserts. He loves that. He's going to actually come by. We're going to make some Babbo rum one of these days when he can get off from his busy school schedule, yeah.
I suspect Vincenzo would call it football, though, and not
calcio.
Soccer.
Calcio, actually. Calcio.
Calcio.
That's Italian. Italians that love soccer so much, they have their own word for it that no one else even uses. It's called calcio.
I've been to a Serie A match, and I don't even think I realize. Oh, calcio. Calcio, C-A-L-C-I-O.
Exactly. Yep.
Oh, yeah, I should. It's amazing how quickly you lose it, right?
Right.
You know, how fast that happens. I see the phone ringing again, and I just want to remind you the reason that they're here. Well, we wanted to talk to Gino and Allison about their work, but Chris on Twitter says, I thought today you were discussing craft beer consolidation. We are going to do that, Chris. One of those just shuffles where availability changed for a number of guests. It happens at the last minute, and that's fine. And so we shuffled things around, and so that's going to happen 2 weeks from today. We've got 3 more Summer of Food conversations coming over the next 3 Thursdays for you. And that conversation on craft beer consolidation and questions about, you know, is it ipso facto evidence of selling out if a conglomerate buys a craft brewery? That conversation is going to happen 2 weeks from today. So there you go, Chris. Matt writes to us on Twitter and says, Restaurant Fiorella is fantastic. Menu reminds me of my childhood. Congratulazione per il primo anniversario.
Oh, grazie mille.
Was that pretty close?
Yeah, you sound like yeah, I understood you.
Let me go ahead and let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll continue in our Summer of Food conversation with the owners of Restaurant Fiorella. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the Next Connections First Hour, building a school from scratch in Rochester, especially when you don't come in with a lot of money. We're going to talk to the founder of a school called the River School, his efforts to get it off the ground, any roadblocks he's met, and what's happening now. Then second hour, we're talking about lying, the culture of lying, the story of Ryan Lochte. Why is lying so common? Talk with you Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and our guest Gino Ruggiero and his wife Allison, talking Summer of Food, and we're talking Restaurant Fiorella, and Steve in Pittsford is next up. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, you guys were talking about Italy, and we've been there a few times, and absolutely enjoyed the food, but one thing what we absolutely also noticed was there's a very different restaurant culture in Italy and pretty much throughout Europe than there is here in Rochester and basically anywhere in the U.S. It's much more relaxed there. They never give you the check until you ask for it. In fact, when we were in Via Reggio, we had to basically chase our waitress down in the kitchen to ask for the check. And I'm wondering why you guys feel that there's such a difference in the culture of eating and just how restaurants handle themselves in the States compared to so relaxed in Europe.
It's a great question. And Steve, why don't you stay there, and I'll start with Gino. Go ahead, Gino. What do you think?
Well, I think, Europeans in general, when they go out to eat, it's more of a celebration, they're going out to have a good time and have fun. Not that we don't do that here, but sometimes people go out to eat and they're they're very regimented. They got to be here, do this. It's just more of a relaxing experience for them. So they kind of sit back, and they have just the way their menus are laid out are different than they are here. I know in Italy, for example, it's very common to have an antipasti course, a primi piatti, a pasta, a carne or pesce after that, and then a dolce dessert and an espresso. So right there alone, you're drawn out for who knows how many hours. So you're kind of just you're going out. It's usually at a restaurant where you're friends with the owners, or you've been going there for many years, and they just kind of relax and have a good time.
Allison, anything to add to there?
Sure, absolutely. We've learned our lesson on some things like that. We've had to, things that we would have liked to be more traditionally Italian, we've had to Americanize them. And other things that we don't really bend on, like we're not offering free bread on the table. And that seems to upset a lot of people.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go to Italy, there's not usually free bread on the table.
Yep.
Steve, are you still there, Steve?
Yes.
Let me just briefly to kind of affirm what you're saying there. I mean, our first trip was in 2008 in Tuscany, and stayed at this tiny bed and breakfast, and they helped book a couple of, you know, sort of small hill town restaurant stops. And one of them was at this restaurant Il Posto, which is the well, I believe, in this tiny little town called Chiusure. And 8 p.m. on a Sunday night, we walk in, we are the only ones there. Now imagine in this country, if you walk in on a Sunday night to a restaurant and you're the only ones there at 8 p.m., how fast are you going to see the chairs on the tables?
Right.
And I'm not saying this happens to Fiorella. I'm just saying, sort of generally speaking.
No, I know.
We not only were there till midnight, they were bringing out extra desserts that were handmade by the grandmother of the owner, and they just wanted us to try them. And I'm going, you know, do you guys want to go? I mean, they're saying you have to stay, you must try this. And I just had never experienced something like that. So I relate, Steve, but I'm curious to know, you're calling because you obviously find some value in that. Do you think the in your experience in our culture here, doesn't it just seem too rushed here? I mean, I kind of can't envision that happening in this country. Can you?
I think it is too rushed here. In fact, we've got a lot of friends from Switzerland, and one time I remember distinctly, we were out to dinner with one of them, and we had just ordered, and the waiter came by and slapped the check on the table, and it scared the heck out of the woman from Switzerland. And she was taken aback and found it very rude. Now, on the same side, I can say that having traveled in Europe, and I've been able to bring groups of people from the U.S., and some who have never traveled to Europe before, they're equally taken aback by the fact that the check doesn't arrive as soon as their food is gone. So I think someplace in between, so you don't feel so rushed. Oftentimes you feel like all they're trying to do is turn the table. And I'm not saying it's your restaurant, you know, that particular restaurant at the farmer's market, but you get the sense that they're just trying to rush you out. And when they slap the check on, you're not even done eating, and they say to you, you know, no rush. Basically, they're saying rush. So I think a happy medium, just so you don't feel so, you know, I'm not saying you should have to necessarily ask for the check, but if you could just feel like you're not being rushed out of there and have it be more like you were talking about in Europe, where it's more of an experience and it's about the food and it's about the atmosphere and it's about enjoying everything all at once rather than going quickly, eating, and then leaving.
Steve, thank you for the phone call, and I'll let them respond to that. Let me also kind of take up for another Italian-themed restaurant in town, which is Rocco, in a very small space. We've had Chef Mark Cupolo on the program, who explains they do. If you go in as a two-top, they've got a 90-minute clock essentially, and some people don't like that. But he says, well, you know, we have such limited space and so much demand that we simply have to do it that way if we want to kind of keep the business running. So sometimes when it comes to just bottom line reasons, I understand that. And it is always easier for me to stand out on the outside and tell business owners, you should do this and you should do that when it's not my skin in the game. Having said that, I think Steve's experience is a valuable one, or at least that perspective that sometimes people do feel rushed. And I know the majority of our culture, we blow through meals. I couldn't believe when I saw NPR reported the average time we take for a meal. What would you guys guess the average time we devote to breakfast is? How much time does the average American devote to breakfast?
15 minutes, maybe.
12 minutes. How much time do we devote to lunch?
Half hour.
28 minutes.
Wow,
how much time? How much time for dinner?
An hour.
24 minutes.
Wow.
The average American is now
That's
taking
wild.
Less time for dinner than lunch, which I couldn't believe, but NPR never gets it wrong. I'm told. And so I was really dismayed by that. What would you say to Steve, sort of as business owners, and his feeling of occasionally he feels rushed?
Yeah, so like the first year here, we've kind of lived and learned a lot, and I'm friends with Mark, and we kind of, it's our favorite restaurant pretty much. And
Rocco.
Yeah, Rocco.
Absolutely.
And
so,
we emulate him and everything he does. We think he's great. And we've kind of learned from him as well. It's kind of, when you have smaller places like ours that aren't like the big expansive separate dining areas, stuff like that, it is kind of like you have to have a, and at first we didn't have any minimums or anything like that, but we would do two tops at 2 hours and some would eat in like an hour and some would eat in an hour and a half. So we kind of had to put that on there just so we can kind of get things moving along. Yeah. And, seat the table again, just because there's so many places now in Rochester and to enjoy, and you kind of have to, maximize your space.
Sure.
And, but there is a happy medium. You're right. I'm always on the servers for rushing people along as well. I hate when courses overlap each other and stuff like that. It's a tough line. We have to, kind of play it on both sides, but it's hard, but we're trying to figure it out.
Sure, because in Italy, obviously, it's a different culture. In this country, Allison, you may have diners who want a server to notice the second they're done with something and get that plate out of the way, and then you may have some who don't want you to touch it.
Sure.
And,
exactly. Everyone's different.
So
and when you demand a certain kind of service, we're employing more staff, and for that reason, we need to turn the table.
Yeah.
It works just
slope.
Like that.
Listeners, let me bounce back to the phones. Actually, let's do that now, because in a moment I kind of want to get to some more on sort of Gino's cooking philosophy and who maybe your heroes or at least the role models were for you in the kitchen. But let me grab another phone call before we do that. It's Charlie in Seneca Falls calling. Go ahead, Charlie.
Okay, I've traveled extensively in Europe over 10 years, a lot of time in Italy, lived in France for 15 months. Quick story about a little restaurant in Monza. I was working in Monza, and fairly early in my time in Europe, everybody's out on the passeggiata to walk around in the evening. It's 7 o'clock. I'm hungry. I want to find a meal. Every restaurant is closed. Finally, a place with an open door. He'd forgotten to lock the door. I come in. They seat me. They serve me. Pretty soon, I'm their friend, the American. And for everyone, I would go back to Monza. That would be where I'd go, and I would get in there a little after 7. They finished serving the staff. He had a little English. I have no Italian. I would just kind of, with my hands, show how big a plate I was hungry for. They would feed me whatever they wanted. It was delightful.
Sounds awesome.
That's just the beauty, the graciousness that you can find anywhere if you are also gracious, I suppose. Culturally, it's a different experience, as you've been talking. In France, as an example, most restaurants aren't going to start serving their dinner meal until 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night. In Italy, it's 8 o'clock at night. The same thing with lunch. A restaurant will be open for lunch from noon to 2, but from 2 to 4, you can get a coffee maybe. Otherwise, you're not going to get anything other than something from the bar. We need to be aware of that when we go to Europe. It's different. It's not the same as here. And finally, to the whole point of turning tables, there are times when I want to eat, I want to be done, I want to go. And other times when we want to sit there and enjoy the ambiance, the meal, the time. Favorite restaurant in Paris, Fratello's. It's actually in Le Cremon-Bicêtre, a southern suburb of Paris. Best restaurant, best Italian, in my view, in Italy or in France. At this point, the owner thinks my name is Sam from Uncle Sam, I guess. Whenever we walked in, "Oh, Sam, my good friend, how are you?" Now, that's about all the English he's got. I don't have a lot of French. But we start with, here's a drink on us. We go through whatever we're going to eat. When we go there, we know we're going to stay. So if you go into a place open to experience, you'll have a wonderful time.
Beautifully said. Yeah, thank you, Charlie. Beautifully said. That story just is another reminder about how food can break down barriers and can really sort of reach across differences. And to Charlie's point about timing, yes, so we were going to be traveling to Piedmont in 2011, and because of our schedule, I had emailed a restaurant for a reservation in advance and said, "Do you mind if we eat early because of our schedule?" And they wrote back, "Sure, you can come early. We'll start you at 7:30." And I thought, okay, that's the early. You know, that's early for them. But I was thinking more like 6, and that was not even possible. But yes, just different culture. But I think that's a really well stated point there, Charlie. By the way, Allison and Gino, have both of you still have family in Italy? Is
yes.
that right?
Yep.
And I know maybe not right in Rome or Rome proper or that area, but a lot of people talking about how devastating that earthquake was. And I suspect no family there for you. But you know,
well, so I'm in like a big group text with my cousins and extended cousins in Italy, and they were all texting each other. Like in Italian, did you feel that? So they all felt it in their town. Their buildings were shaking for a little less than a minute, but it was still very scary for them. And the town that was the most devastated was less than an hour from them.
Yeah, I think we're all, for lack of a better term, citizens of the world, and that has been tough to see.
Definitely.
For everybody. So let me ask Gino, your heroes in the kitchen. You know, you spent a lot of years at Tuvine. I know you had good things to say about Jerry and the crew there.
Totally.
Who do you look up to when it comes to food prep?
Well, you know, going back to when I was younger, obviously my mom, Michelina, and my aunt Kathy were big influences. My grandmother, Anna Maria. A lot of the compliments we get at the restaurant are people saying that our food reminds them of their grandmother's cooking. You know, we have like a lot of Italian Americans who come check it out, whether it be the sauce or the meatballs.
The meatballs, we've had two people cry about the meatballs.
Cry.
I think I have to attribute that to them just because, you know, the way I kind of just emulated what they were doing. And then like formatively, like professionally, definitely my mentor and friend is Jerry Verassi. You know, we wouldn't be able to do this without him. You know what I mean? Like has been so supportive of everything we've done. Michael Calabrese also as well has helped us with design things and stuff like that. Like just, we're just lucky to have good friends in the community who've kind of opened their arms to us, you know?
We always ask people who run restaurants, if you had a child-free night and a plane ticket to go anywhere in the country to do it one time, Allison, where are you going out to eat?
Anywhere in the continental United States.
You got it.
I'm going to San Francisco to Una Pizza Napolitana.
Just you are going there?
With Gino.
Can I go?
Okay.
That's one of Gino's heroes.
We're actually planning right now. We want to do like a West Coast pizza trip to like some of our favorite pizzerias. So that's just in the works right now.
And what's the name of it again?
Una Pizza Napolitana.
Very good. So I want to listen to some of the comments made by Lydia Bastianich on this program back in the fall. She came to Rochester for a book signing and some events. And, of course, you've probably seen Lydia's Kitchen, Lydia's Italy. She's an author, PBS host, and I couldn't have enjoyed that conversation with her more. And we got into a discussion about what it really means when we say Italian, but we're in the United States. And I had mentioned that there was someone in town who I will not mention specifically, who I thought took a pretty dismissive view of what Americans would tolerate when it comes to Italian food and how we've sort of oversimplified what Italian may mean. And I want to listen to what Lydia had to say about that.
The Italian cuisine, first known in America, is the Italian-American cuisine. And that cuisine is different than what Italians eat in Italy regionally. The big influx, the first big influx of Italian immigrants came at the end of the 1800s in the United States. And they basically came from two regions of Italy, which is Calabria, Campania, which is around Naples, and Sicily. And when they came here, these people, you know, I mean, there were no traditional ingredients that they found here. So they had to cook the cuisine that they remember, the memories, the techniques, with the products that they found. And a new cuisine was born, a cuisine of adaptation, the Italian-American cuisine. And it's a very, I think it's a valiant cuisine. It's a cuisine that tells the story of these people coming here and building a whole new cuisine around the products that they found. But, you know, it is now. And it has been kind of negated as Sean for quite a while. I think it's a cuisine that needs to be honored because it is a cuisine. But I think it's part of the Americana history, the adaptation of the immigrants coming into America.
All right, so I'll buy that. I think that's a really poetic description of Italian-American cuisine. What bothers me is hearing people say, oh, I love Italian food, not Italian-American. I love what the immigrants were able, the traditions they were able to build here. It's this idea that spaghetti and meatballs is all we're going to find in Italy when it is so much more complex and regionally specific and beautiful. I feel like I hear the term Italian tossed around too much.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, it needs more explanation, more education, more understanding. And I think, you know, discussion just like these open up the door ever more.
That's Lydia Bastianic on her view of what Italian means in this country. Gino Ruggiero from Fiorella, what do you think?
Again, that's put very beautifully. Yeah, like we're in a smaller city, like, so I mean the world's getting smaller now. In New York City you can have a restaurant that's like focused on the cuisine of the Alto Adige, mm-hmm. or, you know what I mean, or Piedmont or stuff like that. And you'll see that now. You're starting to see that a lot now, like very
not
specific
just Italian, but regional,
exactly,
Italian.
Regional Italian, you know, and you're seeing the pasta shapes, whether they be corsetti or torchios, you know what I mean? Those are becoming very popular now, and you can kind of fit them into the cuisine. But here we also have to look at our customer base, and like I said about our spaghetti and meatballs, like people like it. You know what I mean? It's a fine line, really. We're trying to like educate and introduce new things. Guanciale is something we like scream from the mountaintops at our restaurant, and it's a cured pork jowl similar to pancetta, and we use that a lot in our pasta dishes and stuff like that, and it's very common to Roman cuisine. So stuff like that we'll throw in there too, but at the same time we're trying to, you know, Italian-American cuisine is what it is. I mean, some of it, like fettuccine alfredo, do I want to eat it? No, but, you know, spaghetti cacio e pepe, it's very similar, and you kind of can please everyone, you know what I mean?
Allison?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Gino's saying. It doesn't always translate, and it's hard to have such a specific restaurant in a smaller city like ours.
Yeah.
So when people come out to eat at an Italian restaurant, they're expecting an Italian-American restaurant. So it's hard to get around that, but we're finding our way around it. We have a lot of specials that are usually a lot different than what people are used to.
But we have fun with, like, the campy stuff, too, like chicken parm or, like, you know, the Progresso breadcrumbs on stuff, you know what I mean? Like, the Italian-American, like, that I grew up with, you know, you can have fun with that stuff, too, I think, you know what I mean? Clams Casino, stuff like that.
We do it our way.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, Josh emails the program and says, this sounds like a great restaurant, which I'd love to visit, but I have kids. They're perfect, of course. But some restaurants are not always conducive to a family dinner outing. Please tell me Fiorella is.
Oh, yes. God, we encourage children. It's named after our child.
Yeah, Fiorella is our daughter. She's 2 years old. And little kids, for whatever reason, love our restaurant. And they could get a little loud, though, but be ready for that. But, yeah, we have, you know, the high chairs, all that stuff. We welcome that.
I would think that being first-generation Italian and second-generation Italian, as Gino and Allison are, that taking kids out to eat is part of in your DNA, isn't it?
Sure.
Totally.
Yeah, they have to learn how to eat dinner and not in front of a screen.
Yeah. do you have friends who have kids who say, well, shut it down, we can go out to eat again when they're 18?
Yeah.
Maybe. A lot of our friends take their children out to dinner, especially at our restaurant.
Yeah.
We see a lot of our friends because they're bringing their whole family in the restaurant.
When it comes to the longer meals, Jeremy from San Diego called the program. Jeremy, thanks for listening in San Diego. Probably listening with the WXXI mobile app. I don't know if he's a Rochester native who's traveling, but we love hearing from people in other cities. The mobile app's great, and if you don't have WXXI mobile app, you can get it right now. You can also listen online. But Jeremy called the program to say that the longer meals in Italy are because they are paid more in Europe. I don't know. That's not one that I have all that much experience with. I don't know if Gino and Allison do.
Right.
From my experiences, my cousin works in a restaurant in Italy. The restaurant owners are definitely making more money than they are here.
No,
but the servers aren't tipped there. So
yeah, right. It's more of a profession, you know. And whereas people here are you know, the servers or whatnot might be doing it part time. They're going to college or they're working a day job. They got to get home. They got to do homework. They got to do get ready for the next day. Or, you know what I mean? So when it's your passion and your love, maybe you take the time to really, you know, take care of the customers and make them feel totally welcome. Not to say that we don't do that, but it's more of a part-time culture, especially in the smaller towns like Rochester and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you, Jeremy, for calling from San Diego on that. Sandra in Canandaigua called off-air just to ask for the Fiorella phone number.
It is 585-434-5705.
Do it again.
585-434-5705, and we're also at restaurantfiorella.com.
Restaurantfiorella.com, F-I-O-R-E-L-L-A. And they are here today, by the way, because they closed a little early to come in and talk to us and talk to you, which I certainly appreciate. And before we lose the hour, I do want to ask Gino and Allison about menu construction, because, you know, you say how much you love Mark Cupola. Mark has joked on this program that when he took the butterscotch Budino off his menu, it was almost a riot.
Yeah, right,
with his customers.
Yeah.
You can't do
call
that.
Call the police on
you. People shut up and said, you can't do that. And so I'm curious now, a year in for you, are you getting a better sense for, is your menu going to be the majority sort of fixed and permanent with some other rotation? Is it the other way around? How do you like to create it?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. We were just talking about this. Like, and before we opened, I kind of thought about this too. I was like, what's going to be our, for example, butterscotch budino or our chicken cutlet or whatever. And in this town, people love variety and they love new things, but at the same time, they love regularity and familiarity.
Classics.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They love going somewhere and I know and I get that there and it's like safe for them or something. So we kind of skirt that line where, you know, we keep our menu very seasonal and try to incorporate what's going on in the season. But at the same time, we have items that we, you know, like the spaghetti and meatballs, for example, or the chocolate olive oil cake that, you know, you kind of keep there for people to, you know that they're going to be there and keep bringing back the regulars, you know?
Mm-hmm. So is the menu then the majority permanent or the majority still rotating?
Our menu is real small. So mm-hmm. I would say it's about, I don't know, 50-50.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like a couple, like we, and I like to make the menu very broad. Like, so I have like a simple salad on the menu. Mm-hmm. So every day I can put whatever I want in there, you know what I mean? Whatever's right outside the market there. And we have a Roman style pasta. So that's another thing where I can change it daily depending on what's in season or what I want to use that day. But then there's other things that we kind of keep on there that people like. The pizzas, we only have three pizzas. Because I have a little pizza oven, it's really efficient. We do our pizzas kind of simply because we want to the focus to be on the dough itself. We do this naturally leavening process, very similar to like a sourdough bread. So that's what we want to be the star in there. So we'll do it, you know, real few things really well and kind of, you know, win people over that way, you know.
But I got to follow up and ask because Rob, the engineer, and I were just looking at each other smiling. There was... Our attention was caught when you said chocolate olive oil cake.
Yeah.
I got to know. We got
to... Yeah, that was a thing actually that came about because, originally I wanted to be like this place that served just pizza and gelato. And apparently in Rochester, you can't do that.
No, people were very upset beginning that we didn't have dessert
other
than gelato.
Yeah, people want dessert. So I kind of threw together this chocolate. I didn't throw it together. I mean, I worked on it and made it, you know, the way I like it. And it's people just kind of love it, you know, and it's just... Really a simple, like, flourless chocolate olive oil cake. It's made with an almond flour, so it's very moist, and it's got a nice ganache, and that's about it. The olive oil pairs well with it.
Nice.
It's delicious.
What are you ordering, Allison? If you're a diner in Fiorella, what is your top of the menu for you?
Absolutely the pizza. We are one of the only places in upstate New York, I would say the only place, that has this type of pizza dough. The naturally leavened dough. So definitely the pizza and...
Yeah, that's my baby. You got to try that.
Yeah, that's Gino's baby. And then the crostata, I love that.
Crostata, the eggplant dish you guys like as well.
It's funny, I said one and you gave me three, which, which is fine. Naturally leavened dough, though, you said only one that you know of in this area, huh?
It's true. Yeah, I don't think there's any other ones.
Pizzerias, I don't think pizza places.
No, there's a lot of bakeries that do it.
They're obviously doing Levons and sourdoughs, but
right.
But for as far as pizza goes, I think we're the only one around here doing it.
Well, we're down to our last minute, and something really sort of, well, it's really sweet has happened. I've got a bunch of emails from listeners, Katie Ragone and Spencer Port, others, I'm sorry, Katie is mentioning name pronunciations, talking about Gino, but she said Americans mispronounce her husband's name. Kono is how it's formally pronounced, and her name, K-A-T-I, is Cutty, but everybody mispronounces it. You get classic Italian pronunciations. But she has a story to share. Wow. I have other emails from listeners who are sharing their stories about either their family from Italy or having traveled to Europe and the impact of the experience. So just Allison and Gino being here and talking about Fiorella and talking about their roots in Italy, everyone is sharing these stories, and you see how food connects people.
Totally.
So 20 seconds, guys. I want to know, what's one thing you learned that you did not know a year ago about owning a restaurant?
You were in the hospitality business, just taking care of our customers. You know, we love our customers. We have regulars, but we can always have more. So,
Allison?
I might have learned the opposite, that you can't please everybody.
the feedback has been tremendous this hour, and a lot of listeners saying, been there, love what you're doing. Others saying, didn't know you were there, but we'll see you soon.
Cheers.
They're in the public market. They're online where?
RestaurantFiorella.com.
Easy to find. And they're open for lunch and for dinner. Chef Gino Ruggiero and Allison, thank you so much for coming in on the Summer of Food Conversation.
Thank
you very much. Congratulations on hitting that year mark, and here's to many more.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can
find
more conversations in our Summer of Food at WXXINews.org/connections, and then just search Summer of Food. Great fun, and we've been doing it every Thursday at 1 o'clock. Rob Braden is the engineer extraordinaire. Thank you, Rob. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we'll talk with you Friday on member-supported public radio.